he is here. He is the cool scientist, Sean Duke.
Good morning, Declan.
Hi, Sean. How's it going?
Good, good. It's sunny anyway, so we're all happy, I hope.
It's sunny because of the...
sun.
The exams.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
You, as a scientist, should know.
That's right.
Why? Answer us this question. Why is it always sunny and summery during the leaving and junior cert?
I used to hate that, yeah. You'd suddenly realise, oh my God, I should have done enough more work when it was raining, and now it's sunny and I can't concentrate. So, yeah.
So you have no scientific explanation?
No, I don't actually. No, it's just torture.
That just adds to it. Yeah. It's just the way it is.
Just the way it is.
All right, Sean is here with numerous subjects, things about a cynical attitude and overthinking and a wristband that tells you you've had enough sun. But in Sean's world, they're all very excited again in Switzerland, under the ground. What's going on?
Yeah, the Large Hadron Collider. And I'm sure there's always people when they hear this, they think, what the hell are they doing? But it's exciting stuff. It's the, without doubt, the biggest science project in history. It's just phenomenal. Phenomenal. And it's 2 years now since the machine, this enormous machine, was operational, and they fired it up again. And it's at more power now. So before they had 8 trillion electron volts was what they were operating at before. And the idea was to slam these proton tiny particles into each other and try and recreate what happened at the birth of the universe. And now they've cranked it up and they've come back in operation now, and it's 13 trillion electron volts. And people will remember from before that they found this particle, this Higgs boson particle, and they're all delighted with this. The physicists were delighted with this because basically they said, oh, it was something new. But the real reason I think they were delighted was because it confirmed their view of the standard model, as they said. So everything that we knew about physics was confirmed, and they didn't have to rewrite.
Okay, you know, that sounds an awful lot over our heads.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is exciting anyway.
It's exciting, yeah. They want, it's very academic though, in a sense that they're looking for tiny particles that don't haven't been found, that might explain the fact that we don't know very much. So, for example, as I've said before here, if we look out at the universe, we can only see 4% of what scientists know is out there. So 96% is out there, and we haven't a clue what it is. And they just call this stuff dark matter. And it's called dark matter because they've no other name to put on it. They can't see it, don't know what it is. So this is an attempt to figure out, what is that stuff out there? What's causing all this gravity, etc.?
Right.
So, you know, and the only way to do that is to recreate the early universe when they had this big bang, when particles slammed into each other. And
so do we know where the particles came from in the first place?
Before the Big Bang. There's all kinds of theories. Some people think there were multiple Big Bangs, that there are multiple universes. Some people think there was one single Big Bang, and before that, it's just a mystery. We're moving back in time, though, trying not to get too technical here, but basically, they can look back in time very close to the Big Bang, and they're now within about 400,000 years of... So right back to 400,000 years after the Big Bang, they have a very clear picture. It gets very hazy then if you try to go earlier to the magic moment.
But it's to find out how we all got here.
How we all got here, exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, and they're working at that in Switzerland, and it's very, very exciting. They've all sorted champagne out there when they do this.
They do, yeah, yeah.
So to have a great time. Anyway, for something that might, be affecting us in our day-to-day lives, a cynical attitude will cost you.
Yeah, and I think lots of us are cynical, or that we have a cynical trace, you know, and especially after everything that's happened in the last couple of years, we're cynical towards politics and lots of things, Irish water, whatever it is. But in actual fact, although it's very easy to become cynical based on what you see, look at FIFA or whatever, it's not a good idea. It's not very productive for each us as individuals. And they did a study on this that was reported in a journal called the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology. So they found that cynics were actually earning, not only previous research, I should say, on this has found that cynics have worse health, more psychological problems, more marriage problems than other people do. So we knew that already. This latest thing has actually quantified that, if you like. They looked at people in the US and they looked at people in Germany, and they found that the non-cynics, on average, earned $300 more than the cynics per month. So that's quite a difference. And you'd wonder why. So now they're at the stage where they found this result and they're thinking, right, why is that? The theory they're working on is that actually people that are not cynical, that basically have a view of life that other people are basically good, that we should cooperate. And when you cooperate, say in journalism or whatever sphere, then that opens up all kinds of opportunities. You do better than if you're on your own. But the cynics, what the cynics do is they don't cooperate and they spend their whole time trying to make sure that they're not going to be done over by other people or to protect their interests. And so it's a very defensive approach, and it's not productive. It's not productive.
So they lose out on opportunities.
Out, so love your
okay.
fellow man.
A very hard to ask journalists to be anything other than that, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a cynical attitude will cost you. How about overthinking is not good for creativity? Does that mean that you should go with your initial thoughts on something because you've got the enthusiasm, whereas you stop, you consider, you do everything, and the moment is gone?
Exactly. I mean, let's think of different. I have to apply it to my own. I'm trying to write at the moment, and sometimes when you're really trying to write something, it just doesn't work. You get this writer's block and you have to go off and have a walk. And then suddenly if you're walking around a nice day like this, then something might come to you and go back and start again. Lots of people, I think, would have versions of that happening in their life. And there's a scientific reason, it turns out, why, which is really interesting. Neuroscientists at Stanford, they were, again, they put people in these scanners. We're always talking about these scanners to look at what's happening inside our brain. And they put them in and they said, listen, we want you to draw things. They gave them various tasks and said, I want you to draw this, I want you to draw that. And then they came out of the scanner and they rated the creativity of what the people had drawn. And they found that the people that were more creative, essentially, were not using the thinking parts of their brain. So the thinking parts of the brain are at the front, they're called the frontal cortex there. So when we're thinking, analysing, calculating, making decisions, we're using that. But The most creative people that produced the stuff that was highly rated when they were asked to do these drawings, they actually had their frontal cortex, if you like, more or less shut down. So they weren't thinking and analysing. They were actually able to step back. And interestingly, going back to the walking, the area that was active was called the cerebellum. And they basically thought before that this area did very little except got us to walk, helped us to walk. So it just said, okay, this is how we walk and navigated the environment. But now it seems that when we walk, we also might be creative. This cerebellum is involved in something we didn't think it was involved in. So it's just another example of how if you really try and overthink something, it's not maybe the best thing to do. That maybe you should stand back from your work or whatever situation it is, go for a walk, get moving, swim, run, whatever it is, and that'll give you an opportunity to go back and be more creative.
Okay.
Thanks to our cerebellum.
Yeah, but you do find that's working for you?
I do, actually, yeah, definitely, because what happens, I'm just can only speak for myself, but I get bogged down in detail if I'm trying to write something, and that can get a bit dull, if you like, because you're describing science. So instead of when I'm having a chat with you here, I'm trying to concentrate on telling the story, getting bogged down in the detail, I forget the story, might show it to my wife, who says, that's not working, have to go off for a walk, come back, start again. And that does work. That does seem to
work. Okay, well, that's the way to do it. That's the advice from the cool scientist, Sean Duke. We'll continue our conversation in just a second. But now we turn to getting a tan. Is it for vanity? Is it for vitamin D? Is it for, well, you know, just to what you imagine to look absolutely gorgeous? However, remembering that it can do you damage. So you've got an idea that'll, well, save us and maybe save us in the future. Sean, what is all this?
Science, I mean, we're talking about the Hadron Collider and very abstract, but scientists do occasionally come up with useful stuff as well. And here's a really good example from Belfast. There's a man who'll tell me more as well beside us here. And essentially, it's to do with vitamin D and sunlight. So when we're out in the sun, it's good for us up to a point, like a lot of things. things, because we need vitamin D, which can be produced by sun interacting with our skin. We can get it in our diet as well from fish and mushrooms and things, but often we don't get enough of it. But the question is, how much is enough? And we do get advice from people who say it's a certain amount of hours. But if you're out there having fun and you're in the water coming in and out, you're not going to remember these things. So two scientists in Belfast have come up with this band. It's like a little plastic band, and it's very simple. You just wear it like one of those charity bands, and when you've had enough sun, it's got a colour, an ink, and the ink just changes. The colour of the ink just disappears, and when that happens, it's the alert to get out of the sun.
So it's in contact with your skin, so that's how it's formulated.
No, it's not the skin as such. It's that you wear it, and it's in, and the sun is hitting a photocatalyst, it's called, in the band. So that's absorbing the ultraviolet light, which is potentially damaging. When it's absorbed, your quota, your recommended daily quota of the light, then it says, time to get out of here. And
is that the same for everybody?
No, it's not the same for everybody, because there are different skin types. So there are three main, there are obviously lots of different skin types, but these scientists are going to initially produce bands that would suit three main skin types. Obviously, some skin types can take a larger hit of this ultraviolet light than others. But I mean, it's quite a common thing, skin cancer. I just looked at the figures, and 100,000 people, apparently, 100,000 cases of skin cancer in Britain each year are due to overexposure to sunlight. So in Ireland, you divide that by 12, I suppose, population wise, you end up with about 8,000 cases in Ireland per year. Now, a lot of the people that maybe have had a problem will just avoid the sun. They say, oh, the sun doesn't suit me. This would be typical of some Irish people. I'm not going near the sun. Or they'll be terrified to let the kids out in the sun. And the problem then is that they're not making up the shortfall of vitamin D in their diet.
So you have to get the balance right. Yeah.